Welcome to episode 33 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. Today is the 1st of November 2023. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Horizon IT scandal for Computer Weekly back in 2009.
My name is Nick Wallace and I am the author of the book The Great Post Office Scandal.
Our guests today are Noel Thomas and Alid Job. Noel's name will be well known to many people who have followed this scandal for a while. He worked for the post office on Anglesey in Wales for 42 years before a deficit of £52,000 was discovered at his branch in Gairwen. He was prosecuted for theft and false accounting and sent to prison for 9 months, spending his 60th birthday there. Noel had his conviction quashed in 2021, but his fight for compensation and accountability continues.
Our other guest may be less familiar to you. His name is Alid Job, and he has ghostwritten both the Welsh and English versions of Noel's book, which also features significant contributions from his daughter, Sian, who lived through this scandal with him. Now, sadly, Sian is feeling a bit poorly and can't join us today, but we are delighted that Noel and Alid have joined us to mark the publication of the English translation of Noel's book, The Stamp of Innocence.
Noel and Alid, welcome to the podcast.
Noel, first of all, question for you. When did the idea of actually writing a book come to you and how did you meet Alid?
Thank you for having us on the programme. It started during a campaign for Plaid Cymru on the island, actually, the local elections. And I met Alid's sister. And we started talking and going round, and I mentioned to her that I'd like to write a book, and she introduced me to her brother. So that's where it started, actually. I had been thinking about it for many, many years, but I'm not a very good writer, to be quite honest. So I had to get hold of somebody to do it.
And no, why did you want to write a book? What was the sort of determining motivation behind it?
The motivation behind it is unity, I think, because I wanted to put a perspective on everything. That all 500 or 500 plus of us have been through, and I thought. Living here in Anglesey, in an outpost, if you like, on a small island off the Welsh coast, I thought I had a good story.
Alid, did you know anything about the post office scandal before you met Noel?
Yes, I'd actually read your book, Nick, so I was basically kind of well up on the tail, a good while before I actually. Came to an agreement with Noel actually to write the book itself. So that was very useful background knowledge for me.
And what did you make of Noel when you met him?
Well, actually, I did know Noel, from a distant past, if you like, because I used to be a local journalist on the island and Noel was on the council at that time. So I did actually know Noel to a certain extent at that time. But obviously, we've got to know each other much, much better over the last year or so while in actually doing this book.
And Alid, had you ever written a book before, ghostwritten a book before?
Yes, I've written 4 books before, so this is my 5th one. So,
as a ghostwriter?
Yes, mainly. Yes, yes.
So you were used to the process?
Yes, that was useful.
And both of you, how did you find the process? No, what was it like for you? Was it quite a strange thing at first?
Remembering everything, to be quite honest, was the biggest part. And as you can see from what's going on in the inquiry at the moment, the favourite word seems to come out is, I don't recall. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a man of 76 going on for 77, and if I can't remember, how the hell can these people remember, really? But, it's been a long process, and I've spent a lot of time in the Anglesey archives looking at local newspapers. Most of them have disappeared, but recalling some stories about what's happened and what happened when I was doing on the council.
What was it like for you, Alid?
Well, I was just kind of amazingly blessed in a way, Nick, to be able to be given this opportunity to tell such a heart-rending tale of injustice, which has happened on my own island, Ynysmon, which is a very special place for both Noel and myself, of course, being natives of this island. And just to get to know the family and to really be able to tell a tale of a really salt of the earth, ordinary Welsh family, you know, basically having to face up to an amazing amount of trauma over 16 years and still to be able to keep their dignity and their honour and their faith in life and faith in their fellow man as well. So, you know, it was just a complete honour for me to be able to write the story.
I have to say, it was, I wouldn't call it a joy to read. It was a difficult read at times. I was fascinated by the history of the island as well, which was a wonderful foregrounding to the, or foreshadowing really, of what happened to you, Noel, in terms of the subsequent disaster that happened, that the post office visited on you. I've asked you with very short notice, so I'd appreciate if this doesn't work, we won't use it, but if it can be got to work, I'd be absolutely thrilled if Noel was in possibly a position to read out a passage of the Welsh version of the book, and Alid, you could give us the translated version, which appears in The Stamp of Innocence. Has Sian briefed you on this?
Yes, she has.
Okay.
The home secretary is always well briefed.
We'll just explain why now, Noel, because you refer to Sian as the home secretary, your daughter, on a number of occasions throughout the book, and it's obvious that she's hugely invested in helping you from pretty much day one when things started going wrong. Why did you alight on the name the home secretary?
It seems to be a very important job in this country as a whole, doesn't it? So she's the Home Secretary of Anglesey, of Ynysmon, if you like. And with the technology moving on as it does these days, it was her technical knowledge helped me a hell of a lot, to be quite honest.
Well, we're very grateful to her for setting both you and Alid up to talk to us today. If you wouldn't mind, would you tell us which part of the book that you are going to read out and set the scene for us? And then if you, Noel, wouldn't mind reading that passage in Welsh, and then perhaps, Alid, if you could follow it up with the translation, that would be rather wonderful, I think.
Well, I thought I'd go to the first one, actually. It's called A Noson Gyntaf, The First Night in Jail, actually. And it starts with Clep. Drws mawr di yn cael ar ddwrnod gweithio mywydi. Pendio'r hyn mewn cell, fler, bychan, dwyll. Carchar Walton, Lerpwl, o difan hyn. Dau bync, pedair wal, ffenest fach, gil. Cymryd llwnc arall. A dyna sŵn yn cychwyn yng nghwmpas i. Y gweithdi yn sgrechian. Curod i stop ar y drysa. Pobl eraill, pobl fatha fi, wedi landio yma. O rwla, daeth geiriau hen emyn i meddwl i, pan oeddem ni mewn carchar tywyll di. Wedi ei ganu fod reion, ond rioed di meddwl bas ar geiriau hyn byth yn dod yn wir. Yn digwydd yn fy hanes i, corwel lawer yn fynillad, ar y bync wylod, dim pyjamas, dim bag dros nos, dim byd, dim ond matras galad a plancad deunau, a sŵn wedyn yn dechrau yn fy mhen fy hun.
Bang! A big black door closes on the very worst day of my whole life. I find myself in a small, dark, slovenly cell. This place is Walton Prison. Two bunks, four walls, a narrow window. I swallow and swallow again, and then the noise starts up, the shouting, the yelling, the screaming, the non-stop banging on the doors. Other people like me who have landed in here. From somewhere the words of that old Welsh hymn came to mind, pan oeddem ni mewn carchar tywyll di, when we were once in a dark, dark prison. sung it so many times over the years, never to think or imagine this would ever come true and happen in my own life, here, now. I lie down in complete exhaustion on the bottom bunk of the cell in my own clothes. No pajamas, no overnight bag, nothing at all. Only a hard mattress and a thin blanket and a broken heart.
Yr un mor swnllid, yr un mor di-stop, a mynd round a round. Sut allwn ni, mae dyn yn gallu mynd o baradwys yn y lle cyntaf, cynnes hwnnw, lle gefais i fy magu a landio yn yr uffern perig yma. Pam ddiawl wnes i wrando ar fy nghymreithiwr a phleidio niog yn y llys yna, a dyma fi yma er yr holl eiriau. Pam na wneud i blincin cael centr yn wrando arna i. Faint o weithiau wnes i ffonio nhw i ddeud bod yna broblem efo system Horizon. 10 dwsin o weithiau reit saf.
And the noise then starting up in my own head. Just as noisy and just as non-stop, going round and round and round. How on earth can someone go from paradise, that safe and warm place where I was brought up, and then land up in this dangerous hell? And talking of hell, why the hell did I listen to Wyn Jones and plead guilty in that court? He promised me that pleading guilty in court would keep me out of jail. He promised me. Yet, here I am for all those words of his. And why didn't that blooming call centre listen to me? How many times did I phone them to say there were problems with the Horizon system? 10, 12 times for sure. Warm words again. Don't worry, everything will be okay. Words that betrayed me. Words that let me down.
So what are you in for, mate? Llais gawsar cryf. Y boi yn y bunk uchaf ymhenni yn troi ar draws fy meddyliau. Mi wna'n deud wrth amod i wedi cael fy jelio am ddwyn oddi wrth y post, a hynny ar gam. Yes, sure, mate, we all got to say that, haven't we? Keep ourselves going in here. Hynna naro fe fel goriad yn halcian, a cysuro fel hyn y dwi. Gollais i rhywbeth yn hos bion nôl ddiwedd, ond bu sgwrs Ian wedyn yn cysur yn dy hun. Hadw fi i fynd am dipyn.
So, what are you in for, mate? A strong scouse voice from the upper bunk cutting across my dark thoughts. And then having to tell him that I've been jailed for stealing from the post office, wrongly imprisoned. Yeah, sure, mate. We've all got to say that, haven't we, to keep ourselves going in here. The cynical tone was like a sledgehammer to the head. Was this a dose of reality for the Scousers? Was I just imagining things? Had I actually missed something in my constant revisiting of the past? But Ian's chat was still comforting and in his own way.
Thank you. That was superb. And it is one of the most emotive chapters in the book. And it's a real privilege to be able to have a snippet of it on this podcast. A question for you, Aled. What was the decision-making process which led you to put together the Welsh version of the book first?
Well, I think that was quite a natural decision in a way, Nick, because obviously we live on Ynysmon. You know, it's the second most, it's the second highest Welsh-speaking area in the whole of Wales. Almost 60% of the people live speak Welsh on this island, and I knew instinctively that, you know, there would be a huge readership for this book on the island itself, because Noel is such a well-known character here, having spent so many years working in different communities all along the island, and you know, a very popular character. He is well known through his work as a postmaster and a councillor. So I just knew that knowing this morning with the kind of networks that people have here, that there'd be a big, big audience for a Welsh book to start off with. And then I also knew there'd be a Welsh dimension overall as well, because there'd be an interest in the whole of Wales for the story. So that was the main reason for doing the Welsh version first. But obviously we planned from the start that there would be an English language version to follow as well. So that was the main reasoning.
And Noel, obviously, as that extract showed us, it involved living through some really difficult times, some difficult memories. Did you find the process overwhelmingly challenging to relive it all again, or did you find it cathartic? Did it bring a sense of closure at all?
Oh, it's always hard to read that part, to be quite honest, because, when I first met Alan Bates and we went to Pennycompton, there was about 20, 30 of us in that room.
We ought to very quickly explain for maybe listeners who haven't come across Alan Bates before. He was the man who went on to found the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance, and he appeared alongside you in Rebecca's very first article about this scandal back in 2009. Sorry, I just felt that I should explain it in case no one's come across him before. Forgive me.
When I first met the postmasters that had a problem like myself, and finding the story of, yes, some people were jailed, very few actually, when you think of the amount of people that had been stripped of their livelihood off the post office, I thought that part of the story had to be written, to be quite honest. Because I was unlucky, I should have gone to an open prison, but unfortunately there was no room and I ended up in Walton.
I mean, you talk in that chapter about having faeces thrown at you by one of the inmates and the threat of violence that seemed to be ever present. I've met you a few times, Noel, and you're quite a gentle soul. What did it do to you? How were you living on a day-to-day basis in that environment?
Well, for the first 8 days in Walton, before I went to the open prison in Kirkham, I was locked up 24 hours. The only time I was let out was for my food and about half an hour at dinner time and half an hour to an hour in the evening. So I was totally locked up. But of course, it was all new to me. It was Category B part of the jail I was in. And unfortunately, these people, it was a different scenario from what I knew. And you had to be careful. There were gangs in there. And although there were gangs, and when they met each other, there was always a problem. Always fights, always different things. So you have to be very, very careful and keep your head down, actually.
You wrote in the book, Noel, about how difficult it was never getting to explain your side of things during the justice process, during the court process, when you were first prosecuted, and how frustrating that was. Did it feel through this process of writing the book, did it feel like you were finally getting to do that?
Yes, because I'll be honest with you, my wife has learned a lot about me through the book, because I kept things to myself. I used to go, living on a beautiful island like I do now, I used to go off on walks on my own. And also, I'll be honest with you, my faith kept me going as well. I knew of a little church that I'd passed a lot during my post office life. And I used to go in there and sit down and mediate and just hope for the best, if you like. And I think my prayers helped.
You also spoke quite movingly about the counsellor who you did several sessions with, who almost gave you permission to talk about your feelings and talk about your experiences. And you realised that you'd been bottling them up to almost try and protect your family, but it wasn't doing you any favours until you were able to speak to someone in a completely confidential and neutral setting. Just tell us a little bit more about that. What kind of nature of counselling was it?
It was just a one-to-one talking session, actually, which I was very grateful at the time, because as I explained earlier, Nick, I kept a hell of a lot of things to myself. And through talking to a stranger, if you know what I mean, I was more relaxed. And I was telling her, and she was, of course, she was completely, completely endorsing what I was saying and helping me. And she was coming out with the words of comfort, if you know what I mean.
So for both of you, what are your hopes for what the book will achieve? Do you hope, for example, that it might help prevent another scandal like this occurring, to have your story out there?
Oh, yes, hopefully. And I hope it'll be a big help to the other people that have been involved, to be quite honest. As you and Nick know, it's not just me that I'm talking about. I hope I'm fighting for other people as well. I know I'm only a tiny voice in this, but hopefully some comfort will come out to other people as well.
I think it's got huge journalistic value as well. And Aled, I know you put a lot of work into it yourself, because the way that the Stamp of Innocence works, we've got Sian's voice, we've got Noel's voice, and we've also got your voice in terms of knitting together some of the factual aspects of what was going on in the wider story. Certainly I found, because I've always been fascinated by Rebecca's investigation back in 2008, which was published in 2009, how she found you, how she got in contact with all the people who ended up being in the final piece, and how that knitted together. And it was great to read it from your perspective, Noel, meeting Joe Hamilton and hearing from Roche Garrard in South Warrenburg, the person who wrote to you and said, oh, look, you know, we've heard about your case. We think we've got one in our village. So was that fun piecing all that back together again, or was it just as traumatic as writing about the prison experience?
It was a big relief to find that there were other people involved, to be quite honest. And as I said, apart from Rebecca, with Sean Teckwin, the local BBC reporter, turning up in my door,
yeah,
with yeah, and telling me about Rebecca's work, that was the start of it, as far as I was concerned. Before you and other people came along, Nick, and dug more deeply into the story, to be quite honest. And as I said, when I went to South Warrenburg, first of all, and I met the 20 to 30 other people, all we did that day was drink tea, eat biscuits, and share stories. And everything, the pattern started then. Because the main thing about it all was the post office kept telling you it was only you. And that was coming out very strongly.
I must say, our producer, Will, was shocked to read about the post office's attempt to claw back your pension. And I was just wondering, Aled, was there a detail in the book that you weren't previously aware of that really stood out for you, that made you think, goodness me, or just any little element of what Noel and Sian told you that stood out the most?
Well, I mean, where does one start, Nick? There's so many kind of revelations in the book itself. I think that for me, maybe it's the kind of just complete intransigence and the cold-heartedness of, even now at this late stage, where Noel and Sian have had to endure these post office managers still prevaricating, still stonewalling, and still, as somebody said quite recently, showing this collective amnesia about what actually happened. I just can't believe it that they are still, just continuing with this behaviour. And it's just so insulting, I think, to a person like Noel and the others who have suffered so much, that there's no contrition, there's no humility, there's no acceptance at all of the injustice. So I think that's been something that's really struck me most of all, I think, of the things I've looked at.
Have either of you managed to watch much of the public inquiry over the last few months or years? In fact, it's been going on for. And if you have, what are your thoughts on how it's been going?
Well, the post office have kept stonewalling, haven't they? For example, I'm a great friend of Lee Castleton, who's one of the first that I came across. And throwing in that £600,000 bait, just as when they were digging into Lee Castleton's story, if you know what I mean. And these
we ought to very quickly explain that, Noel. The government announced a £600,000 take it or leave it compensation offer to people who'd had their convictions quashed the night before the public inquiry was due to look into Lee Castleton's case, which was he's another former sub postmaster with a horrendous story to tell. And so what you were saying is that they're playing games, essentially. Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, definitely playing games. Because, as you know yourself in your book as well, it's all started about 1996 when the post office were thinking of a reorganisation and slimming down the network. And, there's been four different governments involved in this, and they all knew about it. Mm. All parties have been involved, Liberals, Labour, Tory, if you like. And every time something important seems to be coming up in the inquiry, something a spanner is thrown in the works, if you like.
I wonder if we could talk about Sian now, the Home Secretary, and the relationship that you've got with her, because it comes out very strongly in the book. I've met Sian a number of times. She's a fierce woman, but she's very gentle and very empathetic and very kind. But she's given over a large part of her life to help campaign for you, hasn't she, Noel? What was it like getting? How important was it to have her voice in this book as well?
Well, she's the one that's fought on behalf of myself and the family. I did have two sons. Unfortunately, I lost one 3 years ago. He was always there, but he wasn't so vocal. The youngest is vocal, but he hasn't got a chance with the Home Secretary, if you know what I mean. But she's been there. She's living with us at home, and she's been there alongside me. Well, during my campaigns when I was going for a councillor job. She was there, she was always knocking on doors, and you could hear her streets away arguing with somebody if they were going to vote for somebody else.
I mean, she grew up with this organisation before it turned on you, didn't she? She was known as Sian Post when she was growing up by all the villagers.
Yes, my eldest son was called Posty. Sian's called Sian Post, and Edwin's called Stamp. So we're a post office family, because don't forget, it wasn't in Gair when we started running the post office. The wife and I started running the post office in my home village on Mathraith in 1974. So we got quite a number of years and post office experience.
What's next for you, Noel and Sian? I guess you're sort of really focusing on compensation still and on this book, but what have you got planned for the next few months?
Well, hopefully good health, and I can carry on fighting on behalf of other people. I know I put a lot of the Welsh dimension into all of this. And I hopefully through the English version, it'll help others as well. Because as Nick and yourself know, and you met a hell of a lot more people than I have, the scandal keeps going and things keep cropping up and the denials are still coming out, aren't they? I do not recall. That's the favourite word that's coming out of the inquiry, isn't it? I don't recall. And when it comes from highly professional people, You just can't believe it, can you?
There is quite a strong Welsh angle to this scandal as well, because, of course, Alan Bates, who you mentioned earlier, he had a post office in North Wales. And there are quite a few employees of the post office who are Welsh. I'm thinking of Angela van den Bogaard and I think Mandy Talbot the other day, one of the lawyers. And after Rebecca's investigation in 2009, you had the S4C programme come and interview you, and they found lots of cases in Wales. I mean, Aled, have you considered any specific Welsh angle on this scandal at all?
Well, I think that there is a very specific Welsh dimension to it, because I think in a way you could look at Noel's story as a metaphor for how Wales is actually treated by England, because, you know, it's long been the case that Wales are kind of are ruled by what seems to be, you know, a completely uncaring, hostile, and alien system. Not by the people of England, I want to stress that, but by the system we have in Westminster, which, you know, is completely divorced from reality for lots of people in the UK. But because of the national dimension in Wales, where we do feel we've been exploited and mistreated for so many years, the story with Noel actually did seem to be a metaphor for, you know, this wider tale of Wales being kind of mistreated and by a system which is very alien. I think it's tapped into a wider Welsh dimension of, the system. You know, the system is against us. So I think that's been a feature of how people have responded to the book here in Wales as well.
Yeah, I noticed. I mean, I love the way you weave a lot of that into the book, and it feels very natural the way that you go about doing so. And that, I think, will make it an interesting read for your English readership when they read The Stamp of Innocence, to take on board some of the things that you've just mentioned, which, as I say, you weaved into the narrative with quite some skill. It's quite an achievement to get a book like this out. I don't know whether it's water off a duck's back for you, Alec, as it's your fifth, but the way that you have managed to pull together Sian's voice, Noel's voice, and pull in some of the wider journalistic context yourself as well. How long does it actually taken you to pull together?
Well, the Welsh language version, I spent 2 months actually interviewing Noel and Sian, and then 2 months writing it. So it was about 4 months altogether. Mm. With the English language version, I didn't want to be simply, you know, a word for word translation. I wanted to have an added dimension. And as you mentioned, Nick, you know, you've got the island element in the story. You've got the wider Welsh dimension as well. So, must have been taken maybe 5-6 months altogether to put the English language version together. And obviously I wanted as well to update people with what was going on in the public inquiry, because there's been such a lot of additional material which has come to light since April, since the Welsh language book was published. So it's probably taken about 6 months altogether.
And you ran a crowdfunding campaign for some of the work, is that right?
Yes, I mean, we'd really want to thank people for this. It was just an idea we had. I approached Sian and Noel with the idea of writing an English language version. And obviously, I didn't want them to have to bear all the costs of that. So I just suggested to them, well, I think it's such an amazing story. Do you think we could actually put a crowdfunding appeal together? And I think, you know, it'd be fair for me to say that both Noel and Sian were a bit sceptical. Who'd pay for this kind of thing, you know? But we were very lucky. I mean, Nick himself, you know, we were very grateful to you, Nick, because you flagged it up as well. And we did have a big spike in the amount of people who wanted to contribute in wake of that. And I think we had something like, 250 people altogether. Who were willing to contribute towards the process of writing the English language book. And we raised about £9,000 altogether. So, you know, I think that really showed, you know, there's a huge amount of goodwill out there from people who want to hear this story and who want it to be more widely known in the UK altogether. So, you know, that's been fantastic. People's responses has been absolutely phenomenal.
And Noel, one of the fascinating elements of the book, which again I don't think I've really ever spoken to you much about, is your recovery. when you were released from prison, and the story of not just taking your case all the way back to the Court of Appeal, but also how you personally recovered. I had no idea that being out of prison on a tag was such an infuriating and anxiety-inducing process, and how you still had then to recover mentally from what you'd been through before you could even start to think about picking up work again. What were those first few years and weeks after prison actually like?
They were hard. As I said, I received counselling. But with the tag thing, I was living in Mastroud, in my home, because my daughter, Sian, had the house there. And we were in a bit of a valley, actually. And, of course, the signal didn't work. And he had these private security firm turning up at about in the middle of the night looking for you and saying that you didn't have the tag on. But I did have the tag on. But I must say this, while I was in Kirkham, I did have an apprenticeship offered a couple of young lads telling me how to take it off. And I'm sorry that I didn't, to be quite honest, because these people kept waking me up. But it was hard. I had that for about 3 months afterwards, another 12 weeks of tag, actually.
And just another chapter that really stuck out to me was, of course, your and Sian's perspective on the Court of Appeal hearing, being in court, the celebrations afterwards. I've seen, obviously, the TV pictures of you and Sian, and there are some great photos which will live well in my memory until the day I die. But to actually get your perspective on it, to be there and to have that pressure, or at least that public disapproval be formally taken away off your shoulders. Just again, just take us through that day, what it was like for you to be there, for you to be in the centre of it, frankly.
Yes, well, I wasn't the only one, was I? You know, 32 others got released from the Court of Appeal that day, which was a huge relief for all of us. But we landed. How can I say? It was like going to a funeral in London, actually, because the COVID was on its height. And I'd never seen London so empty. And the taxi driver that took us from Euston to the Court of Appeal said that he'd never seen in his life London so quiet. There was nowhere at all open. There was a small cafe opposite which we managed to get. I would have liked to have had a drink afterwards, but the pubs weren't open, of course. But, you know, it was a big relief that day in court, and I was lucky enough, really, to be in the same chambers as the three law lords. And when they started off by saying they were disapproving three names, I held my breath, actually, waiting for my name to turn up. But thankfully, I was on the right side.
I remember that day as well, and I was lucky enough to have a front row seat to it. And I remember when Tracy Felstead's name was read out by one of the law lords, she broke down, and Seema Misra as well. She was someone whose eye I caught in the public gallery as well. And the scenes outside, those TV pictures, in a way, it's extraordinary because so many members of the public have seen those pictures and now think, well, everything's okay. The government's announced compensation and everyone's had their conviction quashed. But that's a long way from the truth, isn't it?
It is a long way from the truth. And, you know, thank God for lawyers on our side, to be quite honest, on everybody's side, on the Court of Appeal side. You know, it's so complicated. How can the post office still be judge and jury? If you know what I mean. And I've talked to a couple of ex-barristers when I was working in Holland Arms who recognised me from the TV pictures. And they said, why the hell don't they settle? Why you go through all this process? And they're still throwing money at it, aren't they, Nick? You know, it's unbelievable. It's a bottomless pit, isn't it?
It seems to be, especially as you say, they are releasing yet more money to help the post office find its way through this scandal. Gents, we think we've got everything we need. We've just been making hand signals here in the studio, and we're happy we've asked you all the questions that we'd like to ask. But this is an opportunity for you, both of you, Aled, Noel, to say anything that you want to say about your experience of putting the book together or the wider scandal, because we are delighted that you've been able to get together to do this interview. And you have the floor if there's anything you want to add.
Yes, I'll start by saying diolch yn fawr, thank you very much to both of you, actually. And I'm really pleased, although it's on the screen, that I've met Rebecca at last. I've met you, Nick, and she's more beautiful than I thought, actually. But anyway, I must thank her for the work she did in the beginning, because unbelievably, we wouldn't be here today but for her and Computer Weekly.
Oh, not at all, no. Well, I mean, congratulations for everything you've achieved. It's that book really brought home like how much you've been through, but how much you've achieved. So congratulations on, yeah, the publication and everything else.
All I'd say is that it's very ironic in a way that, you know, it's the wonders of modern technology that enables us to actually conduct this interview. But I think the book, in a way, pits... technology against spirituality, in a way, because I think this tale is a deeply spiritual tale, in a way, because of the fact that you know, spirituality and faith is such a big element in Noel's life. It's a big element on and it's more on itself, and it seems, you know, this sense that we have on this island of a deep kind of connection with the land, with the language, with the culture, with the history, with the traditions. And that seems to have been gone up against this corporate, technocratic leviathan, if you like, which has just basically kind of wanted to squeeze the life out of Noel itself and squeeze the life out of all kind of spirituality as well. So I think that's something that I think hopefully people will find in the book, that there is this deep thread of humanity fighting back against the beast, if you like, in this whole tale.
Well, that is so beautifully put, Aled, and thank you both very much indeed for joining us on this podcast. If you want to buy the English version of Noel's book, it's called The Stamp of Innocence. It's available as an ebook from Amazon or wherever you get your ebooks at the moment. But soon, we're hoping the paperback will be available in all good bookshops, ideally before Christmas. If you want to buy the Welsh version, it came out in April this year, so you should be able to find it anywhere. It's called Llythyr Noel. Is that right, gents?
Yes, you've done very well.
You're being very polite. Llythyr Noel, Noel's Letter. And you can get that from Amazon, all good Welsh bookshops, or you can buy it online at gwales.com.